Welcome back to Too Much Future, the best show about Fallout games and the ones we played. I forget what the thing we say at the beginning is, but you know what's going on. It's Too Much Future.
We just sort of like pick and choose among the Fallout games, playing bits of them at random and discussing them.
Mm-hmm. We're playing Fallout 2. This is episode 13, and last episode was Vault City.
Yep.
And we had some machinery. You played this before I did, and you said, hey, I think last time at the end of the episode we said we're going to Broken Hills, and you said, hey, it's actually better to go to Redding next.
Yes, because I went to Broken Hills and realized that sort of narratively it doesn't make any sense for us to go there.
Well, it seems like that's the problem at the end of the last episode, is that after Vault City, narratively it doesn't make much sense. Like, there's not a good strong sense of where the hell we're supposed to go, period.
Yeah, the design, as I've been able to sort of figure it out at this point on kind of a meta level, right? The way I'm thinking through how the designers intended this experience to be is that there are about four places on your map you could go next. And there is one place you need to go in order for the main plot to progress, but there are no real hints as to which one is the better option. So the idea is that you're going to kind of wander around and go to a couple of these places, and as you go to these other places, you get clearer hints about where you should go next.
And is the next plot place New Reno?
No, the next plot place is NCR.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I did know that. Tried to go there this episode, too.
Oh?
I got a lot of content to share today. Okay. And I'll let you kind of guide us down the path here. But I will say, in between yesterday, when you and I finished recording Game Study Buddies, and this very moment, the next day, I have played 5 hours of Fallout 2.
That's a lot of Fallout 2.
I did not complete Redding.
Oh.
I got close. I got to know. I got far enough that the episode can happen. But, yeah.
I mean, for a given definition of completion, I did not complete Redding either, so.
Are there some, perhaps, creatures in the mine?
Yeah.
That stonewalled the shit out of you?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, but that's for just a minute from now. Tell us about how you got to Redding.
Well, so the first thing actually to begin with is that Twelinor had some unfinished business in Vault City. You'll recall back when we were in the Den, Twelinor made her opinions about slavers pretty well known.
You don't care for it.
Yeah, I don't care for it. And the thing about Vault City is that they got some dang slaves.
Uh-oh.
Like, they don't call them that, but they got a slavery system, Cameron.
Yeah.
And Twelinor didn't like that. However, there is a problem. Whereas in the Den, you could just, you know, kill the slavers and cheese the level design and make your way that. And also, no one cared, right? Because the Den was an anarchistic place of Darwinian struggle. People in Vault City tend to care when they're being murdered. Or I should say, when they're meeting the swift bullet of justice. But I felt like I wasn't being true to who Twelinor was if, before leaving Vault City, I did not at least shoot all of the guards in the servant allocation center, or whatever it is that they call the building where they keep their slaves. So I did that.
Was Balthazar just there whispering in your ears?
Yes, no, I felt his strength coursing through me. And in fact, some of it rubbed off on Cassidy, who, after I had killed the guards, whipped around and started shooting the slaves.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately...
The whole system, top to bottom. Victim and oppressor, everyone's got to go, as far as Cassidy's concerned.
So then we ran away from Vault City. I quickly, after I think Cassidy managed to kill one of the slaves, because I was like, no. But we escaped, ran away from all of the guards who were now hostile to me, and left Vault City. So everyone hates me in Vault City now, but I think I taught them a lesson. And I went to Gecko to heal myself, and I met up with that ghoul. That rascally gecko in the power plant. No, I met up with that ghoul that you mentioned who had met the, or not met, but saw the vault dweller way back during Fallout 1. Talked to him, and you know what? He can join your party.
Really?
Yep. His name is Lenny, and he is not very good at combat, but he is a good doctor, and that was helpful for me at this particular juncture. So now my party consists of Twelinor, Sulik, Vic, Cassidy, and Lenny. It is a mess.
You've got 15 people running around with you. You got a whole clown car's worth of wasteland wanderers.
It's a strange situation because it makes me slash Twelinor feel kind of like a group mother in that I am constantly because the way that party mechanics work in this game is actually super frustrating. Because you have to like talk to them individually in order to like change their weapon loadouts and like, you know, you want to heal them and things like that. So it does feel a lot like I am surrounded by these four massive doofus sons and I am just constantly like healing their wounds and making sure they're not running out of ammo and things like that. So then I set off.
It's my favorite anime.
Yeah, so after I picked up Lenny, that was when I set off for Redding. What actually happened in terms of gameplay is I went to Broken Hills, and I did a bunch of stuff in Broken Hills, and then I emailed you, and I was like, hey, I don't think we should do Broken Hills next, because this doesn't make a lot of sense. And then I went up to Redding.
Mm-hmm.
And for the time being, we're going to pretend that this is the first thing that happened. On my way to Redding, I passed an interesting little area. I don't know if you maybe encountered this. It was an area one that came up on the map as unknown. It was just southwest of Vault City. And when I went there, it was a cave, and then I could go into the cave, and there was some locked gates, and behind those locked gates were a whole bunch of men with guns, which didn't look good, but I don't know. Like, it's the post-apocalypse, right? It's not illegal to have a mountain compound out in the middle of the desert, so I left.
It's not illegal now, I don't think. it maybe should be. I don't know. But okay, no, I did not encounter this. But this, speaking of that, in my wanderings for this episode, I did encounter like a bunch of like new areas. I encountered or like almost like random events. Did you have any of these happen yet? So I encountered the Bridge Keeper.
Huh. No, haven't you encountered him? Any of these, I don't think.
The Bridge Keeper is just, it's a famous one from Fallout 2. I mean, you might remember it, just not from this playthrough, but it's the bridge guy from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he asks you gameplay questions, and if you're smart, you can like make him explode or whatever, but Tungsten is not smart, so he can just like answer questions appropriately. So I got that one. I got a gecko, like toxic dump. Have you done this one?
No. Like a toxic dump full of geckos?
Yeah, so it's like just one map, and it's like got goop everywhere that like, you know, ground goop that hurts you. It's got that, you know, ludic leakage as they call it. they've got golden geckos, tough geckos, which I had not encountered before, and then fire geckos, which... what a bad time.
Yeah, that sounds like a real bad time.
And so you
why do they
so
call
like,
them fire geckos, Cameron?
Well, they shoot fire out of their mouth.
Okay.
Have you encountered these things yet?
I have not encountered them yet. I remember them, but I have not seen them in the game yet.
Oh, shit, they suck. Talk about a thing that a melee character does not want to hear all about. but anyway, and so it like just plopped me down in the middle of it, and I had to like try to run away, and that sucked. And then I found a crashed spaceship.
Oh my gosh.
With a bunch of red shirts in it.
Like from Star Trek?
Yeah, they were literally labeled as red shirts. And they had, it was the USS, I wrote it down, the USS Torres. And I don't know anything about it. There's no information to learn, but that you could loot the bodies of the red shirts who were on the ground, and they had like a syringe, and the syringe heals all of my health. So it's like three super hyper stim packs.
Wow, and is that the, is it one-time use?
Yeah, it's one-time use.
Alas.
I've used a couple of them already. I traded one away because I didn't know what it did, and then afterward I was like, oh dang, I shouldn't have done that. But yeah, so I've had, so several of those, like, you know, open world encounters that are not just like a bunch of bootleggers or whatever, but like kind of pre-created little places that get plopped on the map. But that was, that is to the side of Tolinor is going to Reading.
Yeah, so I mean, aside from the mountain cavern that I discovered, which as I left it, it was called Raiders. And I guess we didn't talk about this maybe in the Vault City episode, but the cop there, his name's like Sergeant Stark or something, Captain Stark, is mm-hmm. like, oh, we're being attacked by raiders. And I think other people in the town mentioned that Vault City is being attacked by raiders. I guess this is where the raiders come from. So also, I'm not on the best terms with Vault City. They can be attacked by raiders. And I just go on.
The raiders are going to kill... Oh, I'm putting it all together. That's right. Because they think it's from like the canyons down south, and they think that they're being... that they're really smart, right? Because they're like going up and they're like testing the weaponry and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Right. Because the thing that comes up is like they're not like, you know, normal raiders, by yeah. which they mean they're not stupid, right? They're not just like screaming barbarians who are running into their laser cannons, I guess.
Mm-hmm. They're getting it because they could have disabled one of the laser cannons, is what we're told, and they choose not to.
Yes. Okay. And also, like, definitely what I saw suggests that, like, there's more organization here than like, we saw in the cons in Fallout 1. So, but again, like, let live and let live, except for all of the rad scorpions that Tuelenor did have to kill, because also, like, I ran into a bunch of rad scorpions and ants, I guess. You get spaceships and bridge keepers, I get rad scorpions and ants.
Oh, I ran into a lot of, I didn't run into any ants, but I ran into a lot of rad scorpions. That's, yeah, I've been down that road.
Okay, good. And then eventually I got to Reading. And I was, you know, the first thing that happens when you get to Reading is you are greeted by the sultry sounds of an old-timey saloon piano.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was actually greeted by that. I think I might have the sound turned all the way down. I don't really know. But no, I didn't hear very much of that at all.
Yeah. So Reading is in sort of, I mentioned back, I think in the first, or not the first episode, but like the episode of Klamath, that this game more than the previous game is copying like Western genre tropes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Reading is extremely upfront about that. Again, with like you walk into town, it's like this little main street, and you hear someone playing ragtime music on a piano. And it's like a 2 second clip that fades into the normal ambient Fallout noise background. But every time you go into or out of a building, like you hear that same clip again, and it gets really, really annoying. On the other hand, I think Reading is pretty amusing as a location. So it sounds like you maybe it did it take you a while to get to Reading? Did other things happen?
Let me tell you about Tungsten's journey. To Reading. Well, I think maybe I guess one piece of information needs to be asserted / explained. What level was Tuelenor before reaching Reading?
9 or 10.
So Tungsten was level 7.
Oh, that's not good.
Because we've talked about that before, that there's like a weird level difference between us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of that might have to do with like me running around and like running away from encounters. Some of it might have to do like you're getting more experience for having like more dialogue options and like being able to chase some stuff down. In any case, there's a difference in level. And so here's a thing that happened. I went to talk to the sheriff, who's like the central quest hub for Reading. And he said, hey, I don't think you're high enough level. He basically says, like, I don't think you've got enough experience to take this on or something like that, right? But he's saying, you're not high enough level to do it.
Interesting.
So I was like, well, crap, we got to do Redding. Redding's like our thing. This is the episode. This is
Redding's our thing. It's the one that all the fans are looking forward to.
They're clamoring for it. I can hear them outside, you know, scraping and scrabbling, tearing at their clothes and moaning at the heavens.
Redding!
And so you know, I Google and I say, what level do I need to be? I say that to Google. I just type in Google. What level do I need to be, Google? I said level 10, and I was like, oh, crap. Like, how do I do that? So I go. Tungsten begins traversing the wasteland, doing every quest that he has not done.
So, this is really funny. So this means I leveled up when I did accidentally did Broken Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if I had not accidentally gone to Broken Hills, done some stuff there, and leveled up, I wouldn't have been able to do Redding.
Yes. I think that is that's what I figured out about 2.5 hours in. Because, right, like, I've played a lot of this game over the past 15 hours or so. So I go, and I'm doing all kinds of weird stuff. Did you know that Ananias' corpse is the mummy that he had is a ghoul who is alive?
No? What?
So if you talk to someone in Gecko, I don't remember how I got this quest, but if you talk to someone in Gecko, you go do Ananias' thing again, right, with the mummy, you can look at the mummy and you can be like, hey, and his name's like Pinky or something like this, and you can be like, hey, Pinky, wake up. And he like stands up and you're like, you gotta leave, dude. And he starts screaming and he runs away. And you get experience for that. It's fun. That's actually like a quite good quest. I went and fixed part of the power plant with that additional information I got from Vault City and got some more experience with that. Upgraded the power plant. I from Gordon Gecko, Gordon F. Gecko, mm-hmm. if you remember. I went and did like 2 or 3 like small things. That only got me up to like level 8.
Uh-huh.
And so I began roaming the wasteland, grinding. And dying constantly because I only have me and Cassidy and like one melee character with a spear that I got literally in the 4th screen of the game. Right. Like literally I have the same weapon I've been using since I left the village because it's the best melee weapon you can get until you end up with like powered melee weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this point, right, when you get a combat encounter that's, like, people, it's, like, 7 people with guns.
Yes.
And I have good armor. I have the leather armor MK2, the Mark II armor, which is, like, even more strong. And so, you know, I can get shot 4 turns in a row by 7 people, but not 5 turns in a row.
Okay.
And Cassidy can't deal with that at all.
He's got a weak heart.
Yeah, he does. And believe me. I've heard about it. I've heard about that weak heart. I've heard about every problem this man has. And so I'm doing all kinds of stuff. I'm dying all the time. I'm like trying to go back and forth between different things. I go to Redding and try to sign up for a caravan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dying on that too. Fire geckos, like a cohort of 7 fire geckos are killing me and every caravan vanguard. So that's not going to work out. So I do all kinds of stuff. I eventually get to the point where I think I'm just going to level myself up manually to level 10. Right? I'm gonna go into, you know, I'm going to use Fauci 2. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to level up to 10 because what would I do anyway? I would just be grinding, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any difference between grinding for 2.5 hours and, you know, killing rad scorpions and hoping I don't die versus doing it. I tried to do that. Won't work with my Fallout 2 save. I ended up giving myself something that is in my character description, like in my traits at the bottom.
Yeah.
Power armor, (55,000), does nothing.
Wait, just what?
It's just like a trait that just says powered armor, 55,000. Tungsten's, you know, warped metaphysical DNA continues to pay dividends. But also very instructive here because... I am not going to be able to use a character editor on Fallout 2, which is distressing. So I can't do that. So I start doing all kinds of other stuff to try to make it happen. I get the great idea. I think, what leveled up Michael before? He killed Metzger and the slavers.
Oh.
I'll go do that.
I mean, I should say I have also done some grinding. It doesn't sound like it's been as difficult for me as it has been for you. But yes, I also killed Metzger and the slavers.
But you also harvested gecko skins way earlier in the game, and I think that really did put a big gap between us.
Yeah. No, I did a lot of, like, that was part of my grinding sort of strategy, is I was like, I wanted to stock up on ammo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you did all that, right? Mm-hmm. I think, all right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go and kill Metzger and the slavers. That certainly will bring me up a level. By the way, it does bring you up a level, but it took me a long time to get there. I go in, Cassidy and I, me with my spear, Cassidy with his hunting rifle. We cannot kill these slavers. We can kill Metzger, but that doesn't stop like the other 9 of them from shooting us to death. I tried this for maybe 30 minutes, like wow. Over and over again. Doesn't work.
Try my strategy of locking the door.
I don't have a good lockpick skill. Oh. I tried to lock the door. It doesn't work. Yeah, so that's the problem. I try so hard. Okay, I get extremely big brain energy here. Mm-hmm. And I think, okay, I can't get a second party member because I don't have mentats. Or I don't have charisma. Mm-hmm. What will give me charisma? It's mentats. How do I get mentats? I Googled that up. Where are mentats? Right into that Google. Mm-hmm. It tells me Doc Johnson. Yeah, yes. So it tells me Doc Johnson has them in Reading. I go to Reading, steal mentats from him, come back, use them, add Vic to my party, give him a hunting rifle, and we start going hog wild on Metzger. Still can't do it. One of those two people dies. Every time I do it. And I tried to do it 2 or 3 more times. I just went to bed. I was like, maybe I won't get to do Reading. So last night I played for 2.5 hours before bed and did not begin Reading. Even a little bit. That's not the end of the story, Michael.
Okay.
That's not... You might be thinking, oh gosh, how's this ending? Oh gosh, what could he have done? I go back to Gecko. I wake up this morning energized with rage energy. I go to Gecko and talk to the guy who is over Gecko, that shopkeeper. Mm-hmm. I buy dynamite from him.
Okay.
I go back to Metzger. I close all the doors because I can't lock them. Close all the doors. I keep my party in the outer area. Mm-hmm. I go into Metzger. I set the timer on TNT for 2 minutes. I pickpocket him and put it in his inventory.
Okay.
And then I run out and just wait for 2 solid minutes, just sitting there hoping it's going to work out, because I didn't want to, you know, my explosive skill is not very good, so I wanted to give myself a big grace period. It explodes. It doesn't kill him.
Oh my god.
He has more hit points than having a pocket full of dynamite. It does blow everyone away and like knocks them around, but thankfully... it has taken all of his guards who were in that room down to like the minuscule amount of health where they just run away all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to kill the outside guards and then like the outside guards on the street and then kind of go in and clean up. And that still takes a long time, but I killed Metzger by blowing up his pocket. I leveled up and then I was thinking, oh shit, I'm only level 9. After all that, it's only one level. And so for my perk for that level, I took Here and Now, which gives you an additional level. I was just like, I just got to get there. Like, I'm going to burn this perk, right? And so, yeah. So then after all of that, and in total, that is definitely 4 hours of trying to figure this game out. And a lot of other things I did in the middle, too, like trying to make it work. Mm-hmm. But that got me to Reading.
All right. Well, so this actually highlights kind of the weirdness of the design philosophy here, right? Because if this were like a normal playthrough, if it was your first playthrough, you weren't doing any sort of metagaming or trying to do a show on this game, you might go to Reading, find out that you're not high enough of a level to do what you need to do there, right? To do sort of like the quote-unquote town quests or what have you. And so go off and do something else. And because Reading is totally disconnected from the main plot line, you would actually have no reason to ever go back.
Oh, dang.
Right? There's a very interesting thing happening here with, and we've talked about this before, but sort of like the antique version of what we would come to call kind of like open world design.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's, I don't know, it's just, it's interesting to think, like, okay, so we have this level that the player doesn't have to go to, it's totally optional, it is level gated, and, like, you either go there and it works, or you go there and it doesn't work, or you don't go there at all.
Yeah, and it's really close to the den, too. Or it's closer to the den than Vault City is to the den, so, there's a world in which you would go there first.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, have nothing to do or have very little to do. I will say, you know, kind of talking about, your, you know, the antique or kind of, you know, like, RNA ancestor of the open world game, right? The mitochondrial fallout. Mm-hmm. I will say that this whole terrible nightmare of course, the only nightmare that we're experiencing right now. This is the worst thing in my life, of course, obviously.
Yeah.
Nothing else is going on.
Not a single thing.
Not a single thing. This is the, you know, we're you know what, Michael? We're here at the end of history, just chilling out, enjoying stuff. Nothing's going wrong in the world.
Like every day, Jill Stein gets on Twitch and she plays some guitar for us. It's really chill.
Yeah, she's got a whole, she's got a ragtime jug band. We're just wrecking house. It's awesome. And it's unfortunate, right, that 40% of the land is uninhabitable now, but it's not her fault.
Yeah.
But sorry. Ooh, sidetracked. What I will say is that this has made me appreciate, like, Fallout design a whole lot more, because this absolute brick wall, which really is, you know, I think in most games I would have just had to go and, like, kill rad scorpions, right, or whatever. I did actually have a way of getting around it, and it required some sort of metagaming on my part. I don't think if I were really, like, if I were heavily in the roleplay space of Tungsten, I don't know what I would have done, mm-hmm. other than, like, hit things with a hammer or whatever. But, you know, Fallout as a big apparatus did have all the tools for me to, like, get there. Mm-hmm. And get to the thing I wanted to do. And that's pretty cool that I can think, like, okay, I know I can pickpocket a character. I know that I can get explosives. I know that I can go to these places and I know where they are. And I know these different inventories that different people have to sell. So, that, you know, that I don't think I'd want to do it again. But it does demonstrate, or it was a really good kind of exercise in what is the play space of this game.
Mm-hmm. No, that's... Yeah, and sort of what I was pointing out, sort of the... When I said that this is, like, the ancestor of open world design, I didn't even mean that in, like, a, oh, look how much better open world design is, but sort mm-hmm. of,
yeah, yeah.
If I cast myself back to a time when open world design, that's what this is, there's mm-hmm. something really interesting about a game that is going to have a significant amount of optional content that it kind of doesn't care whether or not you take it up or not, right? It actually could, I think, make that world feel fuller and more real, knowing that there is stuff out there that is not connected to the main quest, that is not necessarily going to progress independently of you, but, you know, is going to have a barrier to entry. And, like, either you are going to encounter this stuff by accident, and it's going to feel like a basically organic part of your Fallout 2 experience, or you are going to be the type of gamer who wants to have this experience, and then you can, like, as you did, work toward having it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I actually think that, just like a broad comment about Reading before we talk about the nitty-gritty, I actually think the writing here is pretty good.
The writing here is really interesting. Like, I have a lot to say about some of the writing in Reading.
Let's get into it, yeah.
Yeah. So I already said you stop in Reading, and it's a old West town with some piano music and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the first person you talked to was, but I talked to a guy named Athabasca Dick.
No, I talked to the casino owner first.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, Reading, as I said, it's like this little street. There's a casino, there's a saloon, there's a couple of other buildings, and the casino is, like, sort of the first thing you see on the right. Do you want to talk about what's going on at the casino? Because if I start talking about Athabasca Dick, we're going to get off on a whole tangent.
Okay. Basic sketch on the casino. This is like, you know, this is the Cy Tollerman, right? He's wealthy. He's got a large controlling interest in a lot of the places, and he's running a casino in the wasteland, right? So this is just someone who's extracting wealth. He owns property, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And really, he can tell you a bit about the world and about Reading. As far as, like, villains are concerned, I don't think he's, like, you know, object. He's no Gizmo. Right. But he's not a savory character, I don't think. And he basically, as far as I got, as far as like questy stuff for him, is he tells you about the mining operation in Reading. Reading's a mining town. There is the Morningstar Mine, the...
Cocoa, do you know... Weef.
What was it?
Cocoa Weef.
Cocoa Weef? Okay, yep. I just can't remember. I didn't write it down. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, you're like, oh man, I got Michael to say Cocoa Weef.
Cocoa Weef says what? I just couldn't remember the name of it. I didn't write it down. And then the Wanamingo Mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the Wanamingo Mine is like full of dangerous, devilish characters and creatures. And but he'll sell it to you for $1,000, and if you clear it out and make it operational again, he'll buy it back from you for more. And Tungsten ended up doing that, although did not end up completing the quest yet. But that's kind of it as far as like just unique questy stuff. But you can gamble here. You can do all kinds of casino stuff that you can do in Fallout 2. Let's hear about. What's this guy's name again?
Athabasca Dick.
Okay, let's hear about that.
Yeah, so you can talk to this guy named Athabasca Dick, who is hanging out in an alley behind the casino. And to give you an idea of kind of when we say that the writing here is good, like the characters here have voices, and they're a little maybe trite, but like compared to some of the stuff we've seen elsewhere, and especially like in Fallout 1, the characters having, like, so just to give you an idea, when Athabasca Dick talks about the fact that the people in Reading work in the mines, it's not a great life. They don't really enjoy it in a full, like, liberated sense. So when they get off work, they do a drug called Jet. And everyone in town is doing Jet. And when he says people are basically, they make money so they can buy just enough jet to get by. The way this is spelled in the text of the game is J-I-S-T. Just enough jet, right? Mm. Like, characters have kind of that, again, like, Western twang to the way that they speak. And Athabasca Dick, I keep saying that, you may be wondering, what the heck is that? Well, he doesn't explain his name to you, and in fact, you can make fun of him for it. And, like, as you can in basically every instance of interacting with another NPC, you can make fun of them for anything or for no reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
But Athabasca Dick is... So Athabasca is the name of a lake in Canada, in Alberta. It's a Cree word. Athabasca Dick is the name of a character from a poem by the Canadian poet Robert William Service. Robert William Service was a Canadian poet who originally, I believe, he was born in Scotland. He moves to Canada. And this is the late 19th and early 20th centuries. It's sort of the heyday of a certain form of narrative poetry. So I know all the folks out there listening to Too Much Future love narrative poetry and poetry.
Where all my narrative poetry heads at? Yo!
Yeah! Woo! 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 James Whitcomb Riley, baby!
Yeah!
But yeah, so James Whitcomb Riley, who is a well-known kind of American version of this, who wrote
James, exactly.
The guy who created Raggedy Ann by accident, and also Little Orphan Annie by accident.
So he's in hell, is what you're telling me.
Yes. Anyway, Robert William Service is kind of a Canadian version of this. He's known as the Bard of the Yukon. And so he writes all of these sort of poems about, like, the Canadian frontier and the characters that you encounter there and sort of the adventures and the deaths that they have. And Athabasca Dick is one of those characters. In the poem about Athabasca Dick, he is basically a drunk, right? Like, that's the whole point of that poem is that it ends on a humorous note about how he really wants to drink whiskey. Mm-hmm. But just to give you some other little bits from Robert William Service, Cameron, tell me if some of this sounds familiar. So this is one of Service's most famous poems.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Shooting of Dan McGrew.
I'm listening. Okay.
A bunch of the boys were whooping it up in the Malamute Saloon.
They're the kid whooping that it
handles
up?
The music box was hitting a jagtime tune. Back in the bar, in a solo game, sat Dangerous Dan McGrew. And watching his luck was his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou.
That's this whole place. All those are characters who are in Reading.
Yes, and not only that, this is my favorite Service poem, because it's a ghost story. I'm not going to read, like, these poems are much, much longer, right? I'm reading just the beginning. This is called The Cremation of Sam McGee. Listen for the echoes here. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who mole for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge where I cremated Sam McGee. So.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Marge LaBarge is another character who shows up in this town, and the thing that people do in Reading is they mine gold. So.
Someone on the Fallout 2 writing team loved Canadian narrative poetry.
Yes. Yes, right? Like, it is so weird and charming and, like, specific, right? This isn't, I sort of mocked this game earlier for having a Star Wars joke in it, right? But, you know, thinking about the time, like, the special editions has just come out, like, Star Wars maybe still seems a little special, but this seems, like, very idiosyncratically special, right? Like, someone on the writing team for Reading was really into Robert William Service, and it is all over this town.
Can you imagine being in that meeting where he's like, you know, and I'm assuming it's a he, because probably you look at the credits for the game, but the writer for this section was like, listen, this is going to sound weird, but have y'all ever read any poetry about Yukon miners? Y'all, you're like opening up your code a little bit. You got like all these scrolls in there. And you're like, you ever thought about the land of the midnight sun, but the one in Canada? That's cool. I'm glad that you dug that up. I never would have. I didn't encounter this character at all. So
yeah. So I mean, he was the one who told me the way he laid out the political situation of the town for me. First of all, is he explained the jet issue, right? So to get back to the actual game, there's a bunch of miners. They love to take jet. Everyone's addicted to jet.
And jet's like methamphetamine, just in case people don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a there's a political tension in the town. For one thing, so the mayor, who you've talked about already, his name is Escorti. He's kind of in the middle of three potential things happening here. Because Reading is a mining town and they're mining gold, they sell their gold to Vault City, the NCR, which is the New California Republic. If you've never played a Fallout game and this is the first episode of this show you've listened to, and New Reno. So each of those towns is sort of tugging for control. This is where kind of the political... This next set of episodes really is where the kind of political imagination of Fallout 2 unfolds and gets really interesting, honestly. So Reading is supplying all of these towns, but there is a sense in Reading that, you know, eventually NCR or New Reno or Vault City is going to be like, hey, why are we bothering just like trading? Why don't we just annex these people? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, most of the people in Reading feel like it's inevitable that they will be annexed, but the question becomes, like, who is going to annex us, or who will we unify with, you know, before someone forcibly annexes us? Hmm. Now, there is a dangerous Dan McGrew, who runs the Morningstar Mine, and he's pulling for, oh gosh, what is he pulling for? Is this in my notes?
New Reno, probably.
Yeah, I think he's pulling for New Reno.
So I didn't have this conversation, but someone else did tell me that he was close allies with New Reno, which is why I'm saying that.
Yes, and sort of the dynamic there is that New Reno is where the jet is coming from.
Yes, yes.
Right, and so Dangerous Dan McGrew is very happy so long as the jet is coming in, his miners are kept placated, and they're working the mines. There's Marge LaBarge, who runs the Cocoa Weave Mine, and she is pulling for NCR. And then there's the town doctor, Painless Doc Johnson, and he is on the side of Vault City. Now, he is not a totally neutral actor, however, because he grew up in Vault City and then came to Reading, and so there is some suspicion about him and his motives. Athabasca Dick explains all of this to me, and he also tells me about the Wanamingo Mine, which is now abandoned, as you said, because there are things down there. And he was just like, yep, and that's kind of the situation. And that was how I learned about what's going on in Reading.
Yeah, I never got any of that. I never learned. I mean, I pieced a lot of that together, but not like a direct correlation of like, these people want to go with this thing and ally for it. I basically just did the sheriff's quests and then tried to go down in that mine, and that didn't work out for me. And then we recorded this episode.
Great. So I had no reason to talk to the sheriff at this point. I went and I talked to the doctor. I got a lot of interesting lore out of him. He talks about how he is actually the one who is supplying everyone in town with jet, and then I can accuse him of being a profiteer. And what he says, the way he explains it, is that he's just making sure that the chemicals are clean, right? He takes a stipend from each of the mine owners in order to, like, but he does not actually sell the jet. He just supplies it. So New Reno sends him the stuff. He checks it over, makes sure it's clean and okay, and then he dispenses it.
It's very responsible.
Yeah.
Civic duty.
Mm-hmm. And then I talked to the sheriff, finally.
Official range touch stance. Meth is bad.
Yeah, not great.
Don't do future meth or current meth.
Just don't do it.
Just don't do it. Just say no.
Mm-hmm.
As Eleanor said once long ago, the vault dweller, just say no. So the sheriff has a series of like kind of smaller quests. I think we can kind of talk about them really quickly. But I think they're pretty good as far as like a quest line goes in this game. Like they each have something interesting going on. There's a couple ways to solve them. The first one is that there is a woman who lives in a house. She's a widow. She lives in a house owned by the casino operator who, as you said earlier, is also the mayor. I think I left that out of my description before. So the sheriff is tasked. The sheriff fell asleep by a tree recently, and he woke up and a gecko was biting on his leg. Everyone's getting their legs bitten on by geckos in this world. It's like a real issue. Smiley's getting bit by geckos. Of course, the sheriff here. So I talk to him, and he says, look, my leg's all messed up. I need you to go do this for me. So first things first, you got to kick this old lady out of her house. You can go talk to her. You can get all this information about it, but basically she's a Brahmin, like, raiser. She's raising a few Brahmin. She's $200 behind on rent, and she just doesn't have it. Her Brahmin got sick and died, and she can't sell any Brahmin, so what do you want her to do? You want her to be homeless? And I said, no, Tungsten has money, and so paid her debt for her. Second quest. Yeah, I'm assuming that we're all taking the same thing. I don't think Twelinor's doing this one, although we might diverge on the second quest. So second quest is that there's a bar in town called the Malamute, like the dog.
Mm-hmm. The Malamute Saloon.
The Malamute Saloon, and it's kind of across the street, and you can walk over there, and basically the sheriff tells you, hey, It looks like the miners from the two mines, it looks like they're getting rowdy over there, and they're going to have a big fight, and you go break that up. So you can go over there, and like they're hollering at each other, and you can break it up. Tungsten took the strategy here of talking to one of the miners and saying, hey, listen, if you do this, there's going to be blood spilled, and someone might get hurt. And the guy's like, well, you're going to get hurt too. And Tungsten says, I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to kill all of you. Like, that's what's going to happen here. And the guy goes, all right, well, I guess that makes sense to me. And I hauled him off to jail.
That is also what I did.
Threatened, oh, really? You didn't have like better options or anything?
Nope. It was basically the exact, like, I could either nicely say I am taking you all to jail, or I could threateningly say I am taking you to jail. And so I did it threateningly because there were more of them than there was of me and my party. Oh, I should also specify that my party goes down one when I go into a lot of buildings now, because everyone is racist against Lenny, or like ghoul racist, right? No one wants a ghoul in their establishment. So if I go into a place, usually saloons or bars, with Lenny, people get angry.
So you got to leave him outside?
Yep.
Dang, that's messed up. That's some like real, that's some interesting like fabulation around race going on there.
Yep. Also, Vic and Cassidy complain about him all the time.
Really?
Yeah, about how he smells.
Do you have to, so you have to like manually say, hey, wait here, Lenny?
Yep. If I'm going into a place where they don't like ghouls, they will, like, you know, the proprietor or whatever will yell at me when I first go in. They're like, we don't like their kind here. So then I have to go back out and I have to say to Lenny, like, stay right here, and then go in without him.
Sounds like some procedural rhetoric about race to me.
Mm-hmm.
Michael. But so what's interesting here, right, is the Malamute Saloon has a bunch of bedrooms in the back, right? And there are a bunch of sex workers who work here. It's very much this old town, old timey saloon kind of thing, right? That Old West thing that you were talking about before. And what's interesting is part of the dialogue that I had is I could have sent the guy to the jail cell with one of the girls from the saloon. And I chose not to do that, but you could have.
Yeah.
Then we get the last quest. Wait, is it the last quest?
No. There's one more quest here that relates to the sex workers.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I was going to say, did you get this one? Okay.
I did, yeah. So the third one, yeah. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, so the third one, the sheriff, whose name is Earl Marion, by the way. I don't think that's from a poem. Not that I could find.
Mm-hmm.
He tells you that one of the girls over at the Malamute got cut. Someone,
yeah,
like,
cut her
someone,
face all up.
Yeah, cut her face up. One of the Johns or what have you. And this quest is a little strange because I feel like in a normal instance, or like this kind of setup at least suggests to me that like I would be able to talk to the victim. But no, she's just gone, right? All of this is, like, weirdly oblique and indirect. Because he says, okay, so someone cut up this sex worker over at the Malamute. And I will also say that straight up, the quest does not use the term sex worker. It's much more derogatory than that. But anyway, go over and figure out what happened, because we don't know who did it. So you can talk to Lou, who's the woman who works the bar at the Malamute. And she tells you, at first, right, I was confused because it was clear from Marion that the sex worker was alive. But then the way that Lou describes it, it sounds like a murder. Because you ask her what happened and it's like, oh, we heard like screaming and we ran in and it was just this huge mess. And I was like, well, wait a minute. So can I talk to her? And meaning the sex worker. And Lou was like, oh no, she like ran off, like she's gone. Okay. But
yeah,
they did
like I gave her some money, she'll never be able to work again.
Yeah. So but there was some scrip from the Morning Star mine that was discovered in the room. Are we okay?
Yeah, just okay. Banged into the thing. What's interesting about that scrip, and like this town has scrip, right? Each mine has its own like currency, and in the Discord, right, Ainda left a very long message about, like, why is there scrip in this game? And, like, why is there scrip in this town other than it's an Old West town with mines in it? And that's a very good point. It doesn't make any sense.
Right, like, yeah, the shout-outs to Ainda and the Range Touch Discord, because it just does not make sense for a town to have scrip and to have 2 to 3 varieties of scrip at that.
Yeah. Like competing scrip currencies. But yeah, so you got to kind of like do all this investigation here. But then there's like not a lot of investigation to be done.
Yeah, no, I caught the culprit essentially by accident.
Yeah, you just walk in there and you talk to him.
Yeah, so you walk up to the north side of town, it's like a new little screen, and this is where you see the mines, and there's like the Morningstar and the Cocoa Weef, and they're like very clearly labeled, and you go into the Morningstar mine, like, barracks is not the right word, but it's like the room where a bunch of the miners sleep, and just like the first guy you talk to is like, oh, you've come for Obadiah Hakeswill, have you? And it's like, yeah, what?
Yep, indeed. Yes, of course.
Yeah, so this guy is Obadiah Hakeswill, who attacked this sex worker at the Malamute, and he just, like, straight up tells you this, and he's pretty unapologetic because, and I will quote here, she made fun o' me mum.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And his mum is the only good person in this world. In this old world.
Yep. So, a little bit of context here, Cameron.
Oh, no.
Obadiah Hakeswill. That's an interesting name, don't you think?
It's almost the kind of name you'd write a poem about.
You wish. It is actually the name of a character in the Sharp series of historical fiction novels by the British author Bernard Cromwell.
Oh, I'm so stupid. I'm such an idiot.
Yep, no. So Obadiah Hakeswill is a character who shows up in these novels. The novels are about a guy named Sharp who's like navigating his way up the ranks of the British Army during the Napoleonic Wars.
Okay.
Obadiah Hakeswill is like a sort of minor character that he encounters several times who is like a huge, huge jerk and like is always going on about how wonderful his mother was, how his mother is the only good person in the world. So... Oh, and also it was a TV series. Sean Bean played Sharp, and our dearly departed Peter Postlethwaite was the one who played Hakeswill. So
definitely thought you were about to say that Sean Bean played both roles.
Yes.
The way you began phrasing that, I was like, oh my God. Truly the artisan of our day.
Yeah. So anyway, right, there's another like weird literary reference happening there. And a very specific frankly non like general nerd culture reference happening with this character, showing whoever was working on this particular section of this game had some tastes.
Can we take a second to have a moment of our sub podcast Sean Bean appreciation moment?
Sure thing.
So Sean Bean, I was watching the Fellowship of the Ring the other day because we're all, of course, being encouraged to stay indoors due to President Stein's executive suggestion. And he just, what a delightful, like, you know, when I was a youth and watching the Fellowship of the Ring, which I've seen a billion times, I was like, oh, Boromir, you're a goof, you know, like you're obviously, you know, you're being compelled by the ring to do stuff. You can't do things that, you know, you're like not a full character. You're just here to do evil stuff. And now I watch it and just the subtlety of the performance, just his ability to convey his desire to save his homeland while kind of not being very good at doing that. pretty excellent, I think.
Thank you, Sean Bean.
What a great episode. So we solved that, and then we get an additional thing to kill a guy named Frog Croak. No, Frog.
No. Yep.
Yeah, Frog.
His name is Frog Morton.
Frogmorton.
Why
did
they call him Frog?
Because he makes people croak.
Oh, and my
character is even able to be like, come on.
Yeah.
And the sheriff is like, I'm sorry, he made that up.
So this is nice because it's, again, that old Westy kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
That dangerous outlaw, Frogmorton.
Mm-hmm.
He's holed up with some of his folks in the Wanamigo mine.
Yeah, and so everything now at this point, as far as I can tell, directs you toward the Wanamingo mine. So there is also a quest that you can get from either the Morning Star or the other mind. The Kululu, what is it?
Cocoa Weave.
I can't figure it down. I can remember K and that's it. But you can get basically a quest from either of those places where their mining machinery is breaking down and they need like a new control chip. And if you go down the Wanamingo mine, there's going to be a machine there where you can steal it or, you know, remove it from the machine. So everything in Redding at the kind of end of the day is directing you toward the Wanamingo mine. So Michael, I went to the Wanamingo mine. And I killed a bunch of rats and things like that on the ground level.
So many rats.
Killed all these rats. And there's some gang members there who are part of Frog's posse. Kill them. Get a combat shotgun, which is pretty good. So everyone's getting some better weapon. I mean, Tungsten doesn't get that, but Cassidy does. And so we get there. And that's actually kind of like a hard fight. There's a couple hard fights here, but we get through it. And then we go down into the Wanamingo mine, as I like to call it, the worst place.
It is awful. It is so awful. It's very bad.
So did you finish this quest?
Oh, hell no.
Okay. Yeah, me neither.
Like, I did basically the same thing, right? I took the quest from the sheriff, but also had heard from the operators of the mines, Dan McGrew and Marge LaBarge, that they needed these chips for their mining equipment, and there should be some replacement chips down here in the mine. I do everything you just said. Actually, I should tell you, I had an extremely bizarre glitch. So the way that this map is set up, and you enter on the right side of the screen, and then on the far left of the screen is kind of the building where the elevator is that takes you down into the mine, and this is where Frog and a couple of his guys have holed up. But he also has a few other guys that are sort of scattered around as kind of like perimeter insurance. So I'm taking out, kill all the 1,000 rats that are here first, and then I start taking out the guys, and then I'm killing the guy, like, I'm trying to take out the guy who is directly in front of the door into the building where Frog and all of the other, like, the remaining mercenaries are. I shoot him, he dies, right, or, like, you know, me and my large sons kill this guy, and I'm like, okay, now time to walk up here and open this door and initiate combat with everyone inside. As I am walking up to open the door, I step over the body of the last sort of mercenary that I've killed, and suddenly all of the text from his barks starts flashing above his corpse, one after the other, in rapid succession, just not stopping. It just goes and goes and goes, and I'm like, what is happening? And then he comes back to life.
Oh no.
He just like popped up, and he was alive again, and then I had to kill him. And
if it speaks, it must be alive.
Yeah. So anyway, that happened, and then I took care of Frog, and actually I just want to pause here. Frogmorton, what do you think that's a reference to, Cameron?
Is this the man who invented the Pop-Tart?
Yes, actually. That's one.
Yes, got it in one! I needed that win!
This is probably most of a reach of all the things that I've noted here, but Frogmorton is the name of a town in Middle-earth. It's the town that borders the Shire.
It's called Frogmorton?
Yep, one word, Frogmorton.
Weird.
And one of the reasons this sticks in my mind is because there is a brand of pipe tobacco called Frogmorton that is specifically named after Frogmorton from Middle-earth.
Well, so I killed him. Okay, this is actually an interesting thing, too. I kill Frogmorton. I go back and talk to the sheriff before, like, clearing out the mine. Oh. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's got a bunch of siblings. They're probably going to come kill you.
Yes, no, his brothers, Toad, Newt, and Snake Morton.
Yeah, exactly. he's like, well, good luck on that. And then he says, you can keep the badge, which is, I think is funny. I hope that, that comes up again at some point in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, go down to that mine, and it's full of aliens.
Yes, literally, literal xenomorphs.
Yeah, it's just xenomorphs, like shorter xenomorphs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so these are what the people in town have been calling the Wanamingos. I forgot about these things, because they also haven't shown up again, I think, in the Fallout games.
Canonically, they all died, like, 2 years after this is over.
Oh, okay. Well, good for them. Yeah, so when I came into the town and I heard the Wanamingo thing going on, I sort of, like, my mind constructed the memory. It's like, oh, this is just like the slags again, right? There's some sort of ghoul living down there, and I think probably I'm gonna have to kill them all. No, it's these like horrible little black things with like no eyes and like tentacle arms, and they have an incredible amount of armor or damage resistance or something.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. The best thing I could figure out is hitting them in their eyes, question mark, with a targeted
that's
shot.
Cute, right? I think that's very funny. When
yeah,
you do
I do
the,
too. I love the gags that are in like the VAT system.
Right.
I think those are very good.
Yeah. But, so just to make that clear for the viewer listener, right? When VATS comes up, you can target the different body parts. Because this thing doesn't seem to have eyes, there's just the line points to where eyes should be, and it just says eyes? Question mark.
Yeah, eyes. And it says like you when you hit them in it, it says like you think you might have damaged its breathing.
Yeah,
which is also distressing. And so yeah, I tried. Maybe not as many times as I tried to kill Metzger, but I tried a lot. And by the time that they all, so you kind of get down there and combat immediately starts with one of them. And then the others kind of preternaturally know to come and back it up.
Which is so the first one you fight is the queen if you go down through this entrance. It puts you out in the room with the strongest one in the egg chamber.
Is there another way to get down there?
Yes, it turns out that there is like a manhole over in the... Actually, you can go down the manhole. You can also go down the well. There's a well in town that you can go down.
Oh. I went down that well and I saw those the alien things down there and I thought, oh, this is just a different area of aliens. But that makes sense. So maybe I could approach it from one side rather than... But yeah, so I, one time, out of like several attempts, I was able to one time... get down there and like kill her before the next one showed up, and then the next one killed me. So I might go do some other stuff and then come back and finish this quest up.
Yes, say I killed the queen and I ran. Like I managed to kill, like after a couple of tries, I managed to kill the queen and I was like, all right, that's about I'm about, you know, tapped out.
Mm-hmm. But you gotta clear the whole thing, right? To get credit.
Yeah,
for
you
the
have
quest?
To clear the whole thing to finish the quest. So I
dang.
It's as completed as it can be. Like, I just cannot... These things just seem to soak up damage.
Yeah, and they have, like, a lot of hit points, too, which is even worse.
I was gonna say, even with my small army of people, like, it's just... It takes so long to kill one of these things.
Yeah, it's awful. It's not fun.
No.
You know, like, on some basic level, not fun. One time I, like, killed... one of them and I was like, okay, I'm gonna escape and go back up and like save because you're right at the elevator, and then I'll go heal and I'll come back and I'll like kill another one. And I went up and took two steps and I exploded because there's a trap right beside the elevator. And so it's like I have like two hit points and I'm ready to go, and I go up there, boop boop boop, and I explode and my body, you know, turns into 1,000 gyrating pixelated blood clots that zip through the universe. And yeah, got to see some really like horrifying animations in this one. I got to see Cassidy cut people up with a burst fire from a combat shotgun. That was pretty brutal. Saw, when the fire geckos shoot fire at you, someone dying by being set on fire is pretty distressing. Mm. Yeah, I saw a lot of people get chunked in half, exploded in half. It was a rough time for, Tungsten.
The worst thing I saw was some mole rat fighting.
Oh, yeah, I saw that there was mole rat fighting, and I was like, I don't want to be involved in this.
I knew you weren't going to, and so I decided to. I decided to make the experience diverge there a little. I was like, this is some content that I think probably doesn't matter much, and also, I bet Cameron's not going to make the mole rats fight. Mm-hmm. I didn't win any money. So it's animal fighting, right? It's blood mm-hmm. sport. The mole rats kind of go out. They were named Shredder and Vicky. I bet on Vicky. I was not successful because Shredder kind of poked her a couple of times and then Vicky exploded. Again, damn. Because like, I guess, you know, I have the highest gore settings set up in death animations or something. So it's just these two rats kind of like taking little swipes at each other. And then one of them just explodes in chunks.
Yeah, I saw the big pile of dead mole rats and I was like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Some of these things can talk. I don't want to make them fight.
Yeah. One other thing here. Did you go to the Last Gasp Saloon?
I did. So it's like a funeral parlor / saloon.
Yes, it started as a funeral parlor, and then that wasn't doing so well, so he also added a bar. It's very funny.
I bought a round for all my friends. Because I thought that was fun.
Yeah, no, it's very amusing. When you talk to the guy who runs it, he says, like, the sort of pitch of the business is that we take you from the bottle to the grave. And he also has funny. A problem where I guess the Wanamingos are coming up and digging up the graves in the backyard.
Oh.
I don't know why they're doing this. And I guess, presumably, if you kill them all, this will stop. But mm-hmm. I did not kill them all, so sorry.
Hmm. So maybe that's another place to go to for, like, once the quest is completed to get some experience. Okay. Well, that was that's a lot of stuff going on in Reading. You've done the work of determining where we're supposed to go. Where are we supposed to go next?
I would say next we should go to Broken Hills.
Okay. Now, is this the kind of thing where we can go there and complete everything there, or is it a bunch of, like, multi-part quests that we gotta, like, start?
There is one quest that is multi-part in Broken Hills that will hook us into New Reno, and mm-hmm. after we do New Reno, then we can do NCR and continue on with the rest of the game.
Got it. Well, that sounds great. Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at WarrenIsDead.
Is there anything you want to plug?
No.
Go to twitter.com/rangetouch in order to find out everything else we do. You can go to youtube.com/rangetouch to see this thing that you're watching. And if you go to patreon.com/rangetouch, you can give us money. Hey, sounds great. Also, if you give us $3 a month, you can get access to a podcast feed for this if you want to listen to it on your phone. While you are, I don't know, flying an airplane. Mm-hmm. Something else I wanted to say. Oh, right now we're trying to do kind of not quite a donation drive, but a increased patrons drive. We're trying to get up to 200. That's our current goal. Things are very tight right now, and so I understand that for everyone. We're in a rough economic situation, but if you enjoy the things that we make and you want to contribute to what we're doing and helping us out, helping compensate Michael for all of his social media hours, maybe go think about chucking $1 a month our way. That would really help. And at $5 a month, you can get access to a bunch of stuff that we are making. If you enjoyed watching this video and you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button. And if you haven't subscribed already and for some reason you're watching episode like 13 of the series, maybe hit that subscribe button. We're going to go to Broken Hills next time. Anything you want to say on the way out, Michael?
I was wrong when I said that Broken Hills was a place we went in Fallout 1 in last episode. That place is called Lost Hills. I'm sorry, I can't keep any hills apart.
I think I also said the same thing, though, so none of us are free from sin.
Until next time, war never changes, but Fallout sure does.